2, Revolution in Iran. The second prophecy, which out of many thousands I now wish to narrate, relates to Afghanistan's neighbor, Iran. On January 15th, 1906, Hazrat Mirza Sahib, the promised Messiah on whom be peace, received the revelation, Tazalzal dar Iwan Kisra Fatad, shaking in the palace of Chosroes. As was the practice, the revelation was published in all Urdu and English newspapers and periodicals of the Jamaat. At the time of its publication, the then ruler of Iran sat comfortably on his throne. In 1905, he had accepted proposals for popular representation government by parliament, had been promised and proclaimed. The country rejoiced over this, and the king, Muzaffaruddin Shah, was the popular monarch of the grateful nation. Great satisfaction prevailed because a political revolution had taken place without bloodshed. The rest of the world looked hopefully to Iran because this experiment in democracy was new for the whole of Asia, excepting Japan. But they were unaware of the difficulties it entailed. The people were without sufficient education and without sufficient experience of democratic government. At such a time, Hazrat Mirza Sahib published his revelation, shaking in the palace of Chosroes. The revelation seemed strange. Nobody seemed to apprehend the consequences pointed out in the revelation. Iran was happy with its newfound freedom. The king, Muzaffaruddin Shah, was happy with the popularity he had built. In 1907, at the age of 55, the king died. His son, Mirza Muhammad Ali, ascended the throne. The new king confirmed the constitutional changes which had been inaugurated by his father. The Iranian parliament, the Majlis, was to continue. Representative government had come to stay. But a few days later, ominous signs began to appear which pointed to events foretold in the revelation of the promised Messiah. A year after the publication of the revelation, one could see signs of rebellion and disorder. A conflict began between the king and the parliament, the Shah and the Majlis. The Majlis put forward demands which the Shah could not accept. At last, on the insistence of the Majlis, he agreed to turn out certain men, leaders of mischief according to the Majlis. At the same time, the king decided to leave Tehran. Grave tension arose between the nationalists and the Cossacks who formed the king's bodyguard. The revelation of the promised Messiah received partial fulfillment. The Iranian House of Representatives was shelled and destroyed. The king abolished the parliament. General rebellion ensued in many parts of Iran. Laristan, Labudjan, Akbarabad, Bushehr, Shiraz, and practically the whole of southern Iran were involved. Governors and officers of the old regime were dismissed and the administration assumed by nationalists and democrats. Iran was in the grip of internecine warfare. The king could see the country's critical condition. He started moving the treasury and his personal effects to Russia, himself staying behind to use all his tact and will to put down the rebellion. The rebellion only grew. By January 1909, it had spread to Isfahan. The Bakhtiari chief also joined the nationalists. The royal troops suffered ignominious defeat. The king was forced to proclaim his acceptance of parliamentary government. He told the people again and again that the old autocratic order will not be re-established. But God had ordained otherwise. In the palace of Iran, anxiety increased from day to day. At last, even the Cossacks, the Shah's bodyguard, joined the revolutionaries. The Shah and his family left the palace and took refuge in the Russian embassy. This was on July 15, 1909, 2.5 years after the publication of the revelation shaking in the palace of Chosroes. The revelation was literally fulfilled. Autocracy and reaction disappeared from Iran. Democracy came instead. The months of June and July passed in great anxiety. Only those who have ever lived through such conditions can have an idea of the anxiety, the restlessness, and desperation which reigned in the palace of Iran for these 2 months. We need imagination to think of what must have happened. So much at least is clear, that the prophecy of the promised Messiah came true. It was a sign, even though few benefit from such signs. 3. Abdullah Atam. This prophecy relating to Abdullah Atam is a sign for Christians in general and Indian Christians in particular. It is one out of a series of prophecies which the promised Messiah published against a hostile group of Christians. They should serve as a sign for Christians. I do not know, dear reader, whether you are aware of the vile attacks which Christian missionaries made in those days on the person and character of the Holy Prophet, on whom be peace and the blessings of God. These attacks used as their excuse beliefs which Muslims falsely attributed to Islam. Also, some false traditions which crept into the literature of Islam. At the time of Hazrat Mirza Sahib, these attacks were at their worst. Moved by the boldness of these attacks, Hazrat Mirza Sahib decided to attack back. The result at last was that Christians found themselves unable to stand against him. They left the field and abandoned their foul methods. Their present attitude and style of writing against Islam is different. Among vilifiers of the front rank at the time was one Abdullah Atam, a retired civil servant. It so happened that a public debate was arranged between Hazrat Mirza Sahib and Abdullah Atam. The debate was held at Amritsar, and in this debate, Abdullah Atam suffered disgrace. He employed devices of various kinds, but could make no impression. He sank low in the estimation of both Christians and others. In the debate was raised the subject of miracles. Because of this, it seems, God did not let the debate go without a miracle. Hazrat Mirza Sahib had the revelation. Is behas mein dono fariqon mein se jo fariq amadan jhoot ko ikhtiyar kar raha hai aur sachche khuda ko chhod raha hai aur aajiz insaan ko khuda bana raha hai wo inhi dinon mubahise ke lihaz se yani fi din ek mahina lekar yani 15 maah tak haviye mein giraya jayega aur usko sakht zillat pahunchegi basharte ke Haq ki taraf rujoo na kare. In this debate, the party which follows falsehood deliberately, which has abandoned the true God and which seeks to make God of a mere man, will drop in hell. This will happen within 15 months, i.e. within a period counted at the rate of 1 month to every day of this debate. The only condition being that the party should not retreat from its position. In his last paper for the debate, Hazrat Mirza Sahib included this prophecy and declared that the prophecy would prove that the Holy Prophet, on whom be peace and the blessings of God, whom Abdullah Atam in his book Andruna e Bible, literally inner nature of the Bible, had described, God forbid, as the Dajjal, was a true prophet and messenger of God. The prophecy consisted of two important parts. One, that Abdullah Atam, who sought to prove that Jesus was God, would go to hell because of his deliberate fault-finding and vilification. Two, that if he should feel repentant and realize his mistake, he would be saved from this punishment. Or, if he did not change his attitude but persisted in hostility and fault-finding, and yet escaped punishment, the prophecy would be untrue. On the other hand, if he should change but still met his death within 15 months from the conclusion of the debate, even then the prophecy would be untrue. The words of the prophecy clearly indicated that, according to God, Atam was due to live longer than 15 months, but that he would die within 15 months if he persisted in his hostility. A little reflection on the words would show that the two steps of the second alternative lent greater grandeur to the prophecy than the two steps of the first alternative. The two steps of the first alternative were that if Atam persisted in hostility, then he would die within 15 months. For Atam to persist in hostility and unjust opposition was natural and easy. He was a Christian writer who had written books in support of Christianity and against Islam. He held high social status and enjoyed valuable contacts with Englishmen. For this public debate between Christians and Muslims, he had been selected as the Christian exponent in preference to other padris and preachers. Important Christian missionaries acted as his assistants. Such a man could be expected to continue to hold fast to all his Christian beliefs. Having done so much for the publicity of Christianity and played the role of exponent and advocate, one would not expect that he would, even for a moment, recant his belief in the Godhead of Jesus or be impressed by the miraculous power of Islam. To say that, in that case, he would die within 15 months seemed a grand prophecy. But Atam was 65, and a man as old can be said to have completed his span of life. Were he to die, it would not have been so extraordinary. But consider the other alternative. Were Atam to retreat from prejudice and hostility, he would be safe from death for 15 months. It was far more difficult for Atam to retreat from his confirmed and settled attitude against Islam than to persist in it. And while death can be brought about by human hand, a guarantee of life for 15 months cannot be given by anybody. The steps of the second alternative were evidently more difficult. The second alternative could make the prophecy more grand and more impressive. It appears that God chose the more difficult alternative. Atam, in spite of his circumstances, his associates, his position, and his past, became overawed by God and the prophecy. The first sign of it occurred in the debate when Atam put his finger over his ears and said that he had not called the prophet a Dajjal. After the publication of the prophecy, everybody in the country was agog, anxiously awaiting the result. But God did not let 15 months pass without more signs of Atam's retreat from hostility. Atam stopped all his work in support of Christianity. He stopped speaking and writing. A well-known preacher and author cannot at once retire into silence. The fact that Atam did so proves that Islam had made some impression upon his mind, that at least he had come to think it wrong to attack and perhaps even to resist Islam. But He showed this not by retiring into silence only. He suffered great mental anguish, a sort of hell. Feelings of guilt over his unjust hostility towards Islam mounted. He began to have strange hallucinations and admitted this to his relations and friends. He daydreamt about snakes, rabid dogs, and armed men ready to attack him. These experiences cannot be produced through human agency. Snakes and dogs cannot be exploited for the purpose, and India, because of the ban on the free use of weapons, armed men could not be found and paraded. These hallucinations constituted the mental hell into which Atham had fallen. It was the result of remorse, of feelings of guilt over his support of Christianity and hostility to Islam. This mental hell was a substitute for the physical hell to which he would have had to go had he stuck to his antipathy to Islam. If his faith and trust in Christianity had remained as before, if he had continued to regard Islam as false, as he had done before, he would not have suffered the delusions and hallucinations which he did. He would not have suffered from fear of snakes and dogs as he did. If he continued to feel sure that God was not against him, why did these mean animals seem so fearful to him? Why did he abandon all writing and speaking on behalf of Christianity? Why did he go from town to town in dread of something? In short, God chose to fulfill the second part of the prophecy, the part which predicted Atham's retreat from his excessive attachment to Christianity and excessive hostility to Islam. This part of the prophecy was less likely to be true. Atham began to have doubts about Jesus' divinity. The truth of Islam began to dawn upon his mind. On his retreat, God completed the second step of this part of the prophecy. Atham was saved from death, even though fear and guilt had driven him very near it. The promise of God came true. He was saved because he had retreated. This was a grand prophecy, fit to open everybody's eyes. But if nothing had been said or done about it after the appointed time was over, critics of Hazrat Mirza Sahib would, after a time, have gone on to say that Atham had made no retreat whatever, that it was a concoction on the part of Hazrat Mirza Sahib and his followers. To make the truth of the prophecy even more clear, God roused a group of Christians and Muslims to say that the prophecy had proved untrue and that Atham had not died within the appointed time. They were told that the prophecy could be fulfilled in two alternative ways, and it had been fulfilled in the second way. But the critics did not agree and went on to say that Atham had not retreated. At this, Hazrat Mirza Sahib invited Atham to declare on oath that his Christian and Muslim supporters were right and that during this time he had not entertained the least thought of the truth of Islam and the falsehood of Christianity. Atham, however, refused to make any declaration on oath. He made a statement without oath that he still thought Christianity to be true. But, thanks to God and his power over the minds and thoughts of men, in the same statement he declared that his conception of the divinity of Christ was different from the conception of other Christians. This declaration only fulfilled the prophecy. The prophecy had said that the party which sought to make God of mere man would go to hell. Atham admitted that he did not think Jesus Christ was God. Notwithstanding this declaration, Atham was asked if he would make a declaration on solemn oath that he had entertained no doubts whatever about the truth of his religious beliefs, that the truth of Islam had not made the least impression upon him, and that during all this time he had continued to hold the thoughts and beliefs which he had held before. While inviting Atam to make this declaration on solemn oath, Hazrat Mirza Sahib himself declared that if, in the event of such a declaration on oath, Atam did not meet with divine punishment, he would admit his falsehood. He also promised to offer a cash reward of 1,000 rupees if Atam was able to take the oath. Atam wrote in reply that oath-taking was not permitted by his religion. This was strange because in the New Testament, the disciples are said to have taken different kinds of oaths. In Christian states, nobody is appointed to high office unless he takes the oath of allegiance. Even the king has to take such an oath. Judges, members of parliament, high civil and military officers have to take an oath. Witnesses in court have to take an oath. Christian courts, in fact, restrict oath-taking to Christian witnesses. Non-Christian witnesses only say, "I declare before the ever-present and ever-seeing God," etc. Therefore, if oath-taking, according to Christians, is a special privilege of Christians, Atam could not plead disability because of his religion. His plea was not honest. It was a device to escape the oath and its penalties. Atam had seen fearful scenes and had become convinced that if he took the oath, he must die. That Atam refused to take the oath using false excuses becomes clear also from the fact that among Christians, no important religious office is given to anybody unless he takes the oath of loyalty. Protestant Christians, and Atam was a Protestant, have to take two oaths, one of loyalty to the church, the other of loyalty to the state. When these things were explained to Atam, he was completely silenced. The value of the cash reward offered to Atam if he was able to take the oath was raised gradually from 1,000 rupees to 4,000 rupees. The condition of a year of waiting was dropped. Atam could claim the cash reward as soon as he had taken the oath. But Atam knew that out of fear of his community, he was trying to conceal the state of mind from which he had suffered for 15 months. Knowing all this, he dared not take the oath. He spent the rest of his days in silence. All his writing and speaking against Islam was over. The preaching of Christianity was also over. The truth of Hazrat Mirza Sahib's prophecy became more plain than ever. The retreat of Atam from his belief in the Godhead of Christ had, in a way, been admitted by Atam himself. That his earlier thoughts about Islam underwent a change was proved by his refusal to affirm the contrary on solemn oath, and by his reply on being challenged to take such an oath. And yet, in one of his papers for the debate at the end of which this prophecy was made, Atam had tried to prove that Christ was God, and that he possessed all the attributes of God in his person. The greatness and grandeur of this prophecy quickens the faith of every honest person. In it, one can see the working of the hand of God. Here was a sworn enemy of Islam, the leader of an important community and its advocate in controversy with another. He had spent all his life preaching and propagating one religion and propagating against another. This man came to entertain thoughts against his own religion and in favor of the other. This hardened antagonist also had terrifying daydreams. In consideration of this change of attitude, he was saved from the threatened death for full 15 months. These things are beyond human power and human planning.